the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. This is not a good week for Barry Bonds, the San Francisco Giants hitter, who now finds himself hitting the front cover of Sports Illustrated with a giant expose on the use of steroids in sports. And this one's going to be pretty tough to refute. Major book coming out next Tuesday. Again, the cover story in Sports Illustrated. Involved in this is an inside investigative report that just documents conclusively the fact that here you have a player who basically ruined his health and completely transformed himself in terms of his body through the use of anabolic steroids used illegally and covertly and frankly against all medical advice. Also included in this particular package is a series of photographs of Barry Bonds over the course of his career, showing how he was just physically turned almost into another person. We're going to be talking about what that means. We're going to have a very special guest coming up in the second segment. And let me tell you, there is a sense in which what America is going to be talking about here is just the controversy about Barry Bonds. Today on the program, we're going to look at a deeper level. And we're also going to transfer this problem to where I am most concerned about it. It's not that I'm not concerned about the health of major league ball players, whether it's baseball or football or anything else. I'm concerned with all those teenagers out there who think that this is the route to success. I'm also concerned about a sporting culture, an athletic culture that has set it up so that if you're a normal 15-year-old, you're not going to make the team. You know, now you have to have all this muscle mass and coordination and eye-hand coordination and all the rest that is now, and I didn't even know until just recent days that eye-hand coordination is also greatly affected by the use of these steroids. And that's one reason why baseball players and others, even those who aren't hitters, are now tempted to use these drugs. We're going to have a very special guest, a former assistant coach at the University of Nebraska football coach, and it's going to be fun. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some issues in the news. Well, how about this? HBO begins its new series, Big Love, on Sunday night. This is how, on their own website, they are advertising the program, which features polygamy. Think having three wives is a dream come true? It goes on to say that that their show, Big Love, that begins on Sunday night, is about a man named Bill Hendrickson, played by Bill Paxton, who is described as, quote, a modern-day Utah polygamist who lives in suburban Salt Lake City with his three wives, seven children, and a mounting avalanche of debt and demands. Interested? There's a big story here, and that's why I wrote my commentary on this issue at albertmohler.com today. You'll find it. It is entitled Polygamy, Polyamory, and the Future of Marriage. And what's going on here is a lot deeper than HBO. Home box office thinks this is a winner. Otherwise, they would not have put all the money into this series. But there are others who see this as basically a fault line in the culture giving way. On NPR this morning, there was an interview with some Utah and Arizona polygamists. And you're going to find this again and again and again. This is an issue that is now following the logic of the sexual revolution. If, after all, marriage can be transformed into no longer just the union of a man and a woman, but the union of a man and a man or a woman and a woman, then why not the number? After all, as some of the advocates for polygamy point out, polygamy, unlike same-sex marriage, at least has an historical claim. You can look back in history and know that civilizations have allowed polygamy in the past, even some of the patriarchs in the Old Testament. Now, again, Jesus said that was never God's plan from the beginning, and the church has recognized that as sin for centuries. But at least you're talking about something that's a little more familiar to us than gay marriage, so why not polygamy? What is the argument against polygamy? It only comes down to marriage as the norm, the normative institution of marriage as a man and a woman. Back in 1890, when the state of Utah was admitted to the Union, the federal demand was that it must criminalize polygamy. Otherwise, they weren't going to even let the state in the Union. But even now, and by the way, HBO puts this in a disclaimer at the end of the program, even now, as the Mormon Church officially teaches against polygamy, and as polygamy is a felony in the state of Utah, there are at least 30 to 40,000 polygamists. And estimates are there may be as many as over 100,000 polygamists. some of them committed to very, very small and cultic religious movements, most of them allied with Mormonism, at least in the past, by heritage. And others are more like swingers. That's one of the differences between polygamy and polyamory. Polygamy is kind of the old style. You marry and take responsibility for several women. But polyamory is kind of the new style, new age approach, which is you just have all kinds of relationships with persons across gender lines and across number lines. In my commentary, I cite Stanley Kurz. Stanley Kurtz is one of, I think, the most keen observers on these issues, and he points out that bisexuality is one of the engines driving this. And I had written an article earlier about a bisexual kind of union that had taken place in the Netherlands. And one of the things Stanley Kurtz points out is that that is driving a lot of this. And if so, how can it be stopped? I mean, if the logic is that everyone's sexual orientation simply determines who they are, and thus they have to have the equal access to marriage as everyone else, then plural marriage is very close on the horizon. Now, I'm hopeful that this HBO series will not be a success, but there are a lot of things I've hoped would not be a success that turned out to be runaway winners when it comes to Americans watching them, from Desperate Housewives to, well, you could go on from there. But we are going to talk about it on Monday. I'm not going to watch it, but I am going to be talking about it. We're going to be talking about the issue of polygamy, and we're going to be talking about what it means for society to put this kind of, well, you could put quotation marks around the words, alternative lifestyle, and set it to a laugh track. In real life, it's not going to be set to a laugh track. There are other issues in the news that we ought to be looking at. Peggy Noonan wrote a fascinating column in the aftermath of the Oscars, and she really went after George Clooney. You'll remember we played on Monday on this program George Clooney's comment about Hollywood being out of touch. He said, we're a little bit of touch in Hollywood every once in a while. I think it's probably a good thing. George Clooney's turned himself into a political activist who makes all kinds of sweeping claims, and he also lets loose a lot of complaints from the ideological left. Now, that's not all that weird or uncommon in Hollywood anymore. That's pretty much standard fare. As veteran observers of the glitterati, all those Hollywood celebrities will tell you that once they get their fame by acting, they decide they have to be considered as serious thinkers. We ought to be concerned when someone who isn't a serious thinker thinks he or she should be seen as a serious thinker, because what they do is they go shopping for ideas to think about. And thus you end up with actresses. That's right, actresses who play doctors on television testifying before Congress about the dangers of Alar and apples. This is weird in so many different ways, it's hard to even get a handle on it. But George Clooney now wants to be a serious-minded man, and in his film released this year, Syriana, his serious idea is what you would have to package as moral relativism. There's no real difference between the terrorists and their victims. But George Clooney made this statement, we're a little bit out of touch in Hollywood every once in a while, and I think it's probably a good thing, and Peggy Noonan's not buying it. This is what she says, and I love the way she's able to put this into words. She said, George Clooney is Hollywood now. He's charming and beautiful and cool, but he is not Orson Welles. I know that's like saying of an artist that he's no Rembrandt, but bear with me because I have a point that I think is worth making. Orson Welles was an artist. George Clooney is a fellow who read an article and now wants to tell us the truth if we can handle it. She went on, speaking of his remarks, she said, Mr. Clooney's remarks were also part of the tininess of the age and of the modern Hollywood. I don't think he was being disingenuous in suggesting he was himself somewhat heroic. He doesn't even know he's not heroic. He thinks making a movie in 2005 that said McCarthyism was bad is heroic. How could he think this? Maybe part of the answer is this. The Clooney generation in Hollywood is not writing and directing movies about life as they have experienced it, with all its mysteries and complexity and variety. In an odd way, they haven't experienced life. They've experienced media. Their films seem more an elaboration and meditation on media rather than an elaboration and meditation on life. This is how he could take such an unnuanced, unsophisticated, unknowing gloss on the 1950s and the McCarthy era. He just absorbed media about it, and that media itself came from certain assumptions and understandings and myths. End quote. That's Peggy Noonan, and that's rich stuff. Of course, George Clooney was also at the Oscars because of his movie, Good Night and Good Luck, about the McCarthy era. And the bottom line is, it really doesn't wash as history. It really doesn't even wash, given the sources that should have been so close at hand for a George Clooney if he just wanted to read. But he simply has to absorb the media and regurgitate that. I think that's a very good point. I think that's another reminder to us, in the very articulate words of Peggy Noonan, that we need to be watching what comes out of Hollywood, all the more aware of sometimes how little thought is actually going into it. Why Do Boys Read Girls' Books? Fascinating article on that found at Slate.com. It's by Emily Bazelon. She writes about having two little boys, and she was so pleased as a feminist that they were allowing her to read to them from Little House on the Prairie. Then she figured out they weren't reading the book and listening to it the same way that she did. They're not interested in the story and the dresses and the stuff, the narrative. They're interested in the stuff about how to do things, how to tap a tree and get maple syrup, how to load a musket. And she said, you know, they may be listening to the story, but these little boys are different. Well, that's common grace. It's a good thing for this mom to know. Even why little boys allow themselves to be read stories from books for girls. It's about how to do stuff. And we'll be right back. Well, if you haven't seen the new cover story in Sports Illustrated with Barry Bonds on the cover, you probably need to see it. You probably will see it. It's going to be all over the media, and it's already pretty much out there. It's entitled The Truth, Barry Bonds and Steroids. It's written by a couple of authors really working as investigative journalists, and they've gone into the steroid scandal in professional athletics with a particular focus on Barry Bonds. And I'm no attorney, but I can tell you the evidence here is really pretty devastating. And it's not going to stop with this article. It's not going to stop with the book that comes out next Tuesday in bookstores. It's going to come out eventually in all kinds of ways, because what we now know is that all these drugs leave traces. It's not as if this can be hidden. You know, the perpetrators that come up with these drugs and come up with ways to hide them are always one step ahead, but eventually these testing mechanisms come up. One of the sad things to me, let me just say this, I know that Barry Bonds has achieved some remarkable things in sports. I know that he's creeping right up on Babe Ruth's all-time career home run record, and he's starting the season with a 708 number that is just right there before you go on. I know he made $22 million last year playing for the San Francisco Giants. Look at the pictures, though. If you get Sports Illustrated, you need to look at the photographs of the transformation of this man. You need to read the article, and I really do not have time on the air to read to you all the evidence here. But some of it's just fascinating about how he decided he had to do this in order to keep up with Mark McGwire and exceed him, and then how hooked on this stuff he became, even overlooking all the side effects, some of which are pretty gruesome. And then Barry Bonds is still in the game. That's the thing. Even with all the investigations, with Congress looking at it and all the rest, he's still in the game. And yet, here you have Sports Illustrated putting a sidebar on here, an article written by Tom Verducci entitled The Consequences, in which the subtitle is this: Now Barry Bonds Could Wind Up Alongside Pete Rose in Baseball Purgatory. Well, you know, let me be just as honest as I can be. I wish no ill upon Barry Bonds, but I don't think that's the big story here. And I don't know what's going to happen with Barry Bonds. I think just like anything else, you know, actions have consequences, and the consequences, some of them are just visible in his body as you look at these photographs. And they have consequences in terms of legal repercussions and consequences in terms of his place in history. I mean, I really agree with George Will. What are you going to have to do with the record books? Put an asterisk beside all those records in baseball? And let's face it, baseball players live and die by records. You're going to put an asterisk beside them saying this one's drug-induced, that one's not? How long ago did this stuff start? But I'll tell you, my big concern right now is the teenagers out there who want to emulate Barry Bonds, who live and die for athletics, their self-esteem, their purpose in life, you know, so much focused upon sports, some of them football, some of them soccer, some of them baseball, especially football and baseball, basketball as well. You know, what are they going to do? I was talking to a high school coach not long ago who told me, look, these kids are really buying into a culture in which they're going to have to get into a lot of this stuff if they're going to keep up. Otherwise, they just wash out. And for many of them, they think that that means life is over. With me on the program today is the Nebraska State Director of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Ron Brown. Served 17 years as assistant football coach at the University of Nebraska under Tom Osborne. He is co-owner of Mission Nebraska Radio, and I'm glad to say they're going to begin airing the Albert Mueller program there in Lincoln, Nebraska, starting next Tuesday. Ron Brown, welcome to the Albert Mueller program.
Well, thank you, Dr. Miller. It's a pleasure to be on, and we're honored to be able to host your show.
Well, it's going to be exciting to be on there in Nebraska, and especially in Lincoln, because I have to tell you, I married into a family of fanatical University of Nebraska football fans.
Really? There's not many of them.
Well, I know. I can tell you. I know where a lot of them are, and my wife and her late father and that whole family very much. Her father was a 2-time graduate of the university there, and you know, you've got a lot to be proud of when you look at that program. And it's going to be great to be on there in Nebraska. I want to talk to you today specifically, given your background in sports and given your Christian worldview. You know, is the problem, as I described it, overblown? Did I exaggerate any when I talk about the danger that this represents for young people?
You may have even underrated it, Dr. Miller. I really, to be honest with you, I think a big problem is the Christian community. It is that we in the body of Christ have compartmentalized athletics ourselves. And so you got a bunch of young athletes out there who've been brought up in the church, and they're sitting there in church not making the connection between God's word and that sermon with their jump shot or with their baseball bat. And God gave them ability out on the athletic fields, and yet there's a compartmentalization between their faith in Christ and what takes place on that field. And so not only we can't expect the non-Christian kids to get it right. They're going to chase the world's definition of success and use whatever means necessary to get there. But the body of Christ, the kids in the Christian world, those are the ones I'm concerned about, because these are the ones who can lead the Barry Bonds into the area of what is the difference between God's way of doing it and man's way of doing it. And we're not reaching the Christian kid today the way we should biblically in the world of sports.
Well, I am so thankful that you set that out so clearly, Mr. Brown. Let me come back and ask you, you've described a situation there of an imbalance and how we as Christians really haven't responded to this in any distinctively Christian way. Let me ask you to speak to that 16-year-old who desperately wants to make the high school football team, or maybe he's made it and he wants to stay on it. And maybe he's noticing there are other kids that are growing faster than he is, and they're bulking up. And one of the kids in the locker room says to him, hey, here, you take this and you can find a shortcut. How do you reach that kid? What do you say to him?
Well, I think it is good to point out, there are scriptures that say, do not fret because of evildoers. Don't be envious toward wrongdoers. They'll wither away quickly as the grass fade like the green herb. You know, the Bible clearly talks very often about how fast riches will disappear on us. I think one thing it's very important to point out to youngsters, and this is where a coach can have tremendous, enormous influence, particularly a Christian coach, is that there's two ways of doing anything, including sports, God's way and man's way. And man's way peters out and it ends into nothing. The applause eventually ends, and at the end of the day, there will be not only a frazzled body from the use of drugs like what we're talking about with Barry Bonds, but there also will be unfulfillment in the heart. But God's way not only will provide a fulfillment, but it will produce maximum results. And I think that that's something that a lot of young kids are not able to understand, and primarily is because we in the church have been silent with the message. We come out front and center with it. There are enough great athletes out there and great coaches that can demonstrate what a great body looks like and what great statistics and everything that's out there. There are a lot of great Christian role models out there. It's just we're not getting that message across to that 16-year-old that doing it God's way can be doing it the very best way.
Well, how do we factor in, Mr. Brown, a Barry Bonds? What do we say? I mean, here he is. He's the one making $22 million a year. He's the one who's got himself, right up there, I guess right now, number 3 on the all-time career home run list. What do you do?
Well, I think what you do is you'd have to remind people, again, that they're chasing a definition of success that the world applauds. And if that's the direction that people want to go in, then it's going to be pretty hard to stop them. But I think what you will find, particularly when you go on a lot of pro teams, a lot of these major college teams, and the Barry Bonds of the world, is when you really begin to develop a relationship with them, and you really start pressing into the inner cords of their heart, you'll find all of them are very unfulfilled. They never get enough. Ask Barry Bonds if he has enough. Ask him if $22 million is enough for him. Ask him if 708 home runs is enough for him, and I'll bet you if he was being real honest with you, he would say no. Hence, that's why he has turned to steroids.
And, I have to say, Ron Brown, I think a part of this is, too, he has to know in his heart that he's been cheating. I mean, that's the bottom line. How much honor, valor, or satisfaction can you find in anything like that where you know that you got there by cheating?
Only Christ can fulfill that longing that he has in his heart. That's what I would say to Barry Bonds, and would challenge him to examine that in his life.
And Christianity always points us to value that which is good and true and real.
Absolutely.
Ron Brown, it's a privilege to have you here on the Albert Mueller Program, and I look forward to joining you in Nebraska starting next Tuesday. Folks, it's time for you to join the conversation. The phone number 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is a big story. I mean, after all, Sports Illustrated only has so many cover stories in a year. They've decided this is big. And what kind of caught my attention in this is that Sports Illustrated is going at this pretty much with both barrels. I mean, it's going at it saying, look, it's a crisis point for sports, for professional sports and for sports in general, just amateur and college sports, high school and junior high sports. This is the crisis moment because if you can't deal with Barry Bonds on this, you can't deal with anyone. And they present such a compelling case. Now, it's interesting to note that Barry Bonds still denies ever knowingly, that's the key word he uses, knowingly using steroids. But when you read this article, boy, they just, I mean, either he's lying or everybody else is lying. I mean, those are the only two alternatives. Either he's lying or everyone else cited in this is lying because they have him demanding more and more of this stuff, taking it even when the people selling it to him say he's taking too much, getting so hooked on it that he puts up with all the secondary effects and all the rest. And, here you have right from the story, it says here, sports writers didn't press the question about steroids. Most attributed the changes in Bonds' body to a heavy workout regimen, as though a 33-year-old man could gain 15 pounds of muscle in 100 days without drugs. You know, this is superhuman stuff. This just doesn't happen. You know, just the way the human body works, the male adult human body just doesn't put on that kind of muscle mass in that kind of time. It just doesn't happen, not without drugs, and that's why just about everyone on the inside knows this stuff is taking place. They may not know exactly how, what drug, or what, and again, the tests sometimes lag behind the people coming up with this stuff. But again, what does this say about our culture's idolization, or idolatry is a better way to put it, of sports and of sports heroes, and you know, just keep pressing for more. Where's the concern for the real here? It's a question at the Olympics. It's a question all over the place. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Christine calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Christine.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I'm going to ask my question, then I'll just hang up. I'm on my way to work, so I'll listen to your answer real quick from my radio. I have a 15-year-old son that plays high school football, and I'm wondering how I can know as a parent. My understanding is a lot of this happens in the locker room where, obviously, as parents, we're not allowed. How do I know when my child is taking some kind of a performance-enhancing substance? What kind of signs do I look for? Or are there any kind of tests that I can do on him to know whether he's doing something like that? Thanks, and I'll listen to your answer.
Yeah, Christine, that is a great mom question. God bless you for listening, being concerned, and asking that question about your son. And I'm not a pharmacist, and I'm not a medical doctor, and I don't play one on the radio either. But I can just tell you that the stuff that's available out there for all of us to look at says that some of the danger signs, especially for teenage athletes, would be a massive increase in body mass out of nowhere. You know, again, these kids are growing, especially boys that age. They're growing. They're putting on muscle mass, especially as they're working out and the practices and all the rest. But they're not putting on 15 pounds of muscle in 90 days. That just doesn't happen, not naturally. And so that's a danger sign. Other danger signs they mention are a real change in behavior because, after all, these anabolic steroids, you know, we can only be so specific here on the radio. Let me just tell you, what they're doing is creating artificial testosterone. Now, you know, you take your average 15-year-old boy, he's got a lot of testosterone to begin with, and his body's experiencing all kinds of changes, and then you bring on all these synthetic, it messes things up. That's the bottom line. It messes things up. It messes things up physiologically, and you would think that would scare these kids to death. You would think the average teenage boy, when told some of the side effects of this stuff, would be scared to death. But they are so intent on the sports and so intent on making the team and staying on the team and achieving, and some of them so intent on making a college team and all the rest. They're willing to put up with all kinds of things. And some of this also leads to mood swing because an excess of testosterone tends to lend itself towards increased aggressiveness. And there are all kinds of things there. I would say this, Christine. If I had a teenage son on a football team, I'd want to know from my doctor or pediatrician, whoever looks at this kid, I'd want to know what kind of things would he be looking for and what kind of evidence would there be. And I'll tell you this, you can almost be assured that your son is going to be offered something. He may, he hopefully will not be offered something by a coach or, you know, an adult authority figure, but he's likely to be offered something from a friend. And I'm told these days, sometimes from the back pages of catalogs, sports magazines, where these things can be bought and, you know, they come looking like vitamins. This is tough stuff. You know, when you talk about being a parent in this age, boy, don't we have a lot to watch out for? But we're really watching out as much for the hearts of our kids, aren't we? I mean, isn't that the deeper issue? You know, I just, my heart would go out to a 15, 16-year-old kid or a 24 or 25-year-old man. Or for that matter, a woman, young woman, athlete. You know, how important is this? Is it really that important that you would put your life on the line? Is it really that important that you put your health at risk? Is it really that important that you would cheat? Because that's what it is. Even if everyone else is doing it, it's still cheating. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The issue is steroids. The next call could be yours. You know, the moral and spiritual, theological questions about this really kind of go all around in circles, don't they? I mean, we could think about so many, and they're all interconnected. For instance, what is God's purpose for us as human beings? It is that His glory be demonstrated in us. And is God's glory demonstrated in someone who transforms his body artificially and chemically from one thing to another just in order to get more home runs in the year? You know, I really appreciated what Ron Brown said, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes there in Nebraska, former assistant coach for so many years under Tom Osborne at Nebraska. He was a football player himself, by the way, at Brown University. And he said, you know, this just kind of misses the whole purpose of life. And it's tragic when you see it in the Barry Bonds. I think it's just frightening when you see it in generations of young athletes out there that are tempted to go the very same way. And I think, again, we just have to go back to the fact that the Christian worldview begins with our ultimate purpose for existence being to display the glory of God. How are we going to do that? I think it can be done in athletics, but, you know, this raises some real complications. Let's go to Ashley calling from New Bern, North Carolina, listening on XM 170. Ashley, your turn.
I was listening in. You know, lately there's been a lot of negativity towards steroids. I do believe in sports, specifically baseball, it is cheating. They do need to target all sports if they're going to speak on it. Though baseball seems to be the target. I mean, it's probably widely used among football players way more than baseball. I myself am a competitive bodybuilder, and bodybuilding is the mainstream. I do believe you can portray Christ through bodybuilding. I don't believe it is cheating in bodybuilding. It seems to be the norm, especially at the pro level.
Okay, Ashley, and I appreciate your call. Let me just ask you a couple of questions, and I mean this with genuine interest. When you say that it's the norm, are there rules in bodybuilding that say you can't do this? I mean, honestly, I'm so ignorant in that whole area, you're going to have to inform me, but I do know that there were charges about Arnold Schwarzenegger having used steroids in order to achieve his, Mr. Olympic or Mr. World title or something like that. Is that a legal issue in bodybuilding?
Not right now, it's not. At the Arnold Classic a couple years ago, athletes were subpoenaed in court, but it was more to raise an uproar. I believe young children should be, and teens specifically, should be swayed against it. But I believe it's an adult decision if you want to carry forward with a bodybuilding career.
Hmm.
That it should be allowed. But, again, there is no legal – even the promoters know that the athletes are using performance-enhancing drugs.
That's pretty scary to me. Let me ask you one other follow-up question, if I may, Ashley. And I mean this just at the biggest picture question. Let's just think about the biggest picture question. If our purpose for living is to reflect the glory of God, and that means in our bodies as well as in our actions and in our minds and all the rest – And when you think about that, you know, I just think about the human physique. You know, do you think God's glory is most clearly seen in someone who becomes kind of super muscle bound and all the rest? Or, you know, what do you think we should strive for? I mean that honestly. I'm trying to think it through with you. What should we strive for there?
Honestly, I would love to see the guys go back to natural bodybuilding. I love the way it looks. It's a more natural look. But to be at the top of the sport, the guys do what they have to do, which is unfortunate, I agree. Ronnie Coleman, however, he is the current Mr. Olympia. He's won it 7, 8 years in a row, going for 9 this year. And he gives about a 30-minute speech every time he finishes Olympia about God and, you know, tells people if you haven't tried Christ to give him a try. And, you know, he believes that the Olympia and bodybuilding and teaching people about Christ, and that is a place where there are many people couldn't be reached, is, you know, in a bodybuilding contest. Because
yeah.
There is a lot of sinful action there, but he brings a Christian side to it and tries to portray Christ when he's there.
Well, I appreciate your call, Ashley. In fact, you've informed me of a whole area of life in which, I know very little. And it's good to have that brought in here, because I think there are a lot of young men who are very tempted and interested, you know, to look at this kind of thing. And, you know, even without the athletics, let me just talk about the fact that I think there are a lot of, for instance, there's a new book out suggesting that the problems that have been really traced for many years about female body image, you know, you have teenage girls who feel like they're too fat or they're too skinny or that, you know, they just don't have the physique or the kind of body, the kind of figure that would be attractive to young men. You know, that leads to self-esteem problems and all the rest. And you get, you know, what is real beauty? That's a big question. That's where we as Christians need to show up. Real beauty is about the inside more than the outside. It's about character, and it's about the virtues that only Christ can bring being demonstrated. It's that's true beauty. But now we're being told that teenage boys are increasingly showing up with the same kind of problems of body image and all the rest. And all you have to do is look at the magazines and the newspaper articles and the magazine advertisements, television advertertisements, and you got these kids, or you got the male body now being presented in such an idealized form. You know, there are very few of us that come close to looking like that, you know. And that's why most of us are wearing shirts rather than not. You know, it looks better, trust me. One of the things that we can give to God's creation is to wear clothes. But, you know, when you start thinking about all this, you realize we're sending a lot of mixed messages about the purpose of life. We're sending a lot of mixed messages about what beauty and goodness is. We're sending a lot of mixed messages about how human achievement should be sought and honored. I mean, you just take achievement. We valorize, we honor those who break the records. You know, those who fly higher than anyone's ever flown before, fly longer than anyone's ever flown before. Lindbergh crossing, you know, being the first to cross the Atlantic nonstop. We valorize that. We valorize people who can lift more than anyone else can lift, run faster and further than anyone else can run. And of course, when it comes to the kind of athletics as formalized as baseball, you know, I have met 6 and 7 year old little kids who can start reciting statistics. You know, who's got this RBI? Who's got this average? What season did this take place? They live in and are fascinated by these statistics of achievement. But what do you do? I mean, for instance, how do you compare Babe Ruth? I mean, so far as I know, the only drug Babe Ruth had access to was caffeine. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there were anabolic steroids back then, but something tells me they weren't very sophisticated. But, you know, what do you do with a Babe Ruth home run over against a Barry Bonds home run? Do you discount Barry Bonds? You know, this one was drug-induced. This one was steroid-enhanced. Or, you know, a lot of people are now arguing, especially the libertarian argument is, just don't worry about it. Don't worry. Be happy. Let everyone take what they want to take. Just take the rules away. The Economist of London making that argument, we're just hung up. This is a Puritanism. You know, we as Christians have to come back and say, this gets back to basic questions about why God made human beings in the first place. Why he made us embodied creatures. How we are, as Christians, to live within these bodies in a way that will glorify God. What are we to do with these bodies in terms of achievement and in terms of every other aspect of life that will glorify God? And we ought to know this. We're the people who are supposed to know that the only way to true happiness is in finding that which most purely glorifies God. Anything less than that, it isn't going to look like happiness for long. I'll be right back. Folks, I've been getting questions about this men's rights movement that is crossing the nation. Right now it's kind of focused in the state of Michigan. The National Center for Men has prepared a lawsuit, and some are calling it the Roe v. Wade for men. It's to be filed on Thursday in U.S. District Court on behalf of a 25-year-old computer programmer ordered to pay child support for his ex-girlfriend's daughter. Now, here's the deal. They're calling this men's reproductive rights, and they're saying this is the alternative to feminism and women's reproductive rights with Roe v. Wade, and that where there is a pregnancy, a man ought to have the right to say, I don't want this baby to be born, or I'm not going to pay for it. And, you know, there's some people saying, look, this just levels the playing field. Here are men. They ought to have the same rights as women. If these women are determined to have these babies, and by the way, this sometimes doesn't even have anything to do with a pregnancy the normal way, but through IVF or embryos being implanted or whatever else. Well, you know, who's going to show up and say, look, this is the kind of nonsense, of perverse nonsense, masquerading as moral debate that takes place once you sever sexuality from marriage in the first place? You know, that is the most amazing thing here. We as Christians can't even come in at the tail end of this debate and talk about it. We can't even debate this men's reproductive rights thing because the whole premise of the controversy is on the other side of marriage and sexuality. It's assuming that marriage isn't the answer to the problem. It's assuming that marriage is not the normative expectation, and it's assuming that marriage can just be sidelined, and so this is just about reproductive rights. Of course, there's a perversity at the very heart of this, which insinuates that a woman ought to have an abortion if the father, the biological father, doesn't want the baby to be born. There's a perversity here in men who frankly, for millennia, have been sexually irresponsible and promiscuous, and now even want a legal way to get out of taking care of their progeny with financial responsibility. But folks, when I'm asked what's the Christian response to this, it's the fact that we got to go back behind this question. We can't jump in this debate. It's like, you know, arguing what to do once you've given up on marriage. That's where we can't go. We got to go back to first principles and say God gave us the gift of marriage, and in the gift of marriage, the gift of sexuality. And once you take sexuality and you take human reproduction outside the context of marriage as the union of a man and a woman before God, it's just one more recipe for disaster. It's just negotiating over the debris. It's just standing in the ruins and trying to argue about, how to be moral on the other side of sin. That's not going to happen. You know, folks, this stuff gets thrown at us day by day. It's not like there's any place where we can stand still. There's no slow-moving stream. We're standing in a fast-moving river of issues being thrown at us. That's why I appreciate the fact you join me day by day, every weekday, for Intelligent Christian Conversation. We'll think these things through together, and I'll meet you next week. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.